Cold mornings, frosty windows. Yep, it's that time of year. So treat yourself and start your day with a cup of fresh roasted Sterling Roastery coffee, sourced from around the world and roasted multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. It's the kind of warm-up every sports fan deserves this holiday season. And right now, you can win one of three $50 Sterling gift cards, perfect for gifting or building your own winning lineup of Java in the morning. Enter today at sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways so you can wake up, warm up, and Sterling up this holiday season. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
125 defining moments, one legendary league. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and a great book is out right now, NFL Moments, 125 Icons and Stories That Define the NFL. It's a definitive visual history of the National Football League, packed with iconic images and untold stories behind the game's biggest plays and its greatest players. From the early legends like Red Grange to today's stars like Patrick Mahomes, this book is a touchdown for fans who crave more than just stories. So give your football bookshelf a Hall of Fame upgrade or snag a holiday gift for that NFL history buff on your shopping list. Pick up NFL Moments, available now at your favorite bookseller. You know, we probably see them almost every single football game we watch at the opening kickoff and every subsequent kickoff after that, and extra points and field goals. But do we really know the history of where the football tee came from? FootballArchaeology.com's Timothy P. Brown joins us to tell us the history of this kicking device. And he's up in just a moment to let us know what the history is.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pig Pen, your portal of positive football history. And welcome to another edition where we get to visit with Timothy P. Brown of FootballArchaeology.com to talk about one of his famous tidbits. Tim, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Hey, Darren. Hopefully get a chance to chat a little bit here and you won't boot me out of the discussion.
Yeah, well, you know we're going to do our shared segues here to get us into, and I'm just going to tee it up for you and let you take off with it. And, of course, we're talking about Tim's recent tidbit that he titled History of Football Tees. And I don't think you're talking about people sipping a brewed thing with their finger up in the air, pinky fingers.
No.
So what can you tell us about the history of the football tee?
Well, so a little personal story first.
Okay.
Fairly often when I'm, you know, I'm always, not always, but frequently combing through eBay in particular, I'm just looking for stupid little stuff to buy that generates a story, or at least I can, it starts me on a story, it starts me down a path. And so I bought this RPPC of Felix LaForce of Hamilton College. And amazingly, I was able to figure out it was him. But anyways, that's another story. And unfortunately, the item got lost in the mail. So I didn't receive said postcard. So I was disappointed. And then all of a sudden it shows up. So I was a happy boy that day. Because it's just...
How long were you without it that you thought you had lost it?
2 weeks, 2+ weeks. Oh, yeah, that's you know, beyond the supposed delivery date.
Yeah.
I'd already been refunded and everything, so then I, you know, paid the guy. But so what I liked about the image was just like, I have other images from yearbooks of guys teeing up the ball on mud or dirt tees. But this was a much sharper picture and a larger picture than most of the early images I have. And so I say, you know, he's teeing up a ball. Like if you watch a rugby match, a lot of times the ball is pointed towards the goal posts, not away from the goal posts. And he's teeing it up towards, which is, you know, one of the styles that kickers choose. Not much in American football, but, you know, in other games. But, you know, back in the day, you could, you know, if you wanted to kick on a kickoff, you either made a divot in the ground, or you gathered up dirt from the field and sod and just you made a mound and you kicked off of that. That was the norm. And in the tidbit, I also mentioned that the word tee comes from the Scottish word for circle, because in golf, they would build a sand mound within a circle, the kind of the circumference of the golf club circling the previous hole, right? So you had to, like, if you made a circle with your golf club, with the hitting part, the head in the hole, you had to tee off from a mound inside that circle. And so that's where tee comes from, circle. So there's a factoid for you.
Yeah. I did not know that.
So anyways, so the, it got to the point where, like, kickers, as fields improved, sometimes there wasn't loose dirt sitting around. So kickers used to have little piles of dirt over on the side of the field. They'd run over there and grab a pile of dirt and build their mound with it. And then people started, like, baking, like, clay molds, because you couldn't have an artificial tee. And there were rules about that. There was a point in, like, 1916, the kicker for Auburn took either his helmet or his teammate's helmet, laid it on the ground, and teed up the ball. That was actually that may have even been, like, on a field goal. But so he, used the helmet as a tee, the floppy leather helmets of the time. So they said, okay, we got to stop this stuff. So they eliminated all tees. And so tees were out of the game from, like, 1924. So first it was artificial tees were banned, then they banned all tees in 24. And that didn't change until NFL did it in, like, 42 and the colleges in 49 or something like that. But so then, I have all kinds of football and sporting goods catalogs. And so I started combing through those just for all the different variations of tees, how did the tees change over time? And so the tidbit has all, pictures of all of those, but it really came down to, like, there's been two fundamental artificial tee designs. One is kind of a multi-peg design. There were, like, these black things with a couple, kind of a rubber base or plastic base with these pegs sticking up, two higher ones in the back, and you kind of lean the ball into those. And then there's other tees that have some kind of a cup or dimple, and then you kind of put one of the tips of the ball into the dimple. And there's, variations on those themes, but that there's kind of this multi-peg and the dimple thing. And so, there was just these variations over time that, like, when I was playing, everybody used these orange tees that had these lines, that kind of kept the ball in place.
I was always frightened of those. I'm sitting there going, one of these days I'm going to get tackled on one of those or something. Impale myself.
Yeah, you needed to make sure you had a little kid who ran out on the field and grabbed the thing after the play. But even, like, Lou Groza had in games, he would use this tee where he had this tape that came out from it, like three or four yard long tape that he used as, like, as an aimer, helped him aim, this strike of his foot. Cause all of these guys were conventional kickers, they kicked with their toe, and, that's the only way that you kicked, there actually were a few soccer style kickers here and there, but so the tees were basically of those two varieties until, 1960s is when soccer style kickers really became more popular. In the 70s, it became almost universal. And so then Jan Stenerud invented what he called the sidewinder tee that was really designed for a soccer style kicker, but that didn't come out until in, like, 83. And then in the 90s, there was another, the Ground Zero, which is, like, probably still the primary kicking tee today. And every NFL kicker uses the Ground Zero, and probably most, college kickers do. But that's kind of a dimple style. It's not a round dimple. It's kind of a, you kind of have to see one. So check the tidbit or just Google Ground Zero and you'll find one. So it's one of those things, it's got to be small enough to be, easily portable. It's got to fit the mechanics of the style of kick, whether you're conventional or soccer style. And then every guy is like, and then the other thing is we have the kicking block, right? So for field goals and extra points, you can't have the little pegs or, you just have a plain little flat little thing. But now you can only use, so there was a long time, 1-inch tee or 2-inch, 1-inch tee, 2-inch tee, 1-inch block, 2-inch block. And then the NFL and colleges got rid of them. And pretty much they're all playing on artificial turf or, nicely right. manicured turf anyway. So you don't really need tees and they kick it so darn far anymore that, you don't need it for the distance or the height. So, anyways, it's kind of a bizarre little history of tees, right? But it is just one of those things, the game evolved, kicking styles evolved, and, so then it makes sense to change the style of tees.
Yeah, I had, when I was officiating, and I did many games for this one particular coach, but he, a local high school coach, he did not like kicking tees at all. I take that back. He didn't like free kick tees, for opening kickoff, kicks off to score. He would let you bring out the block for his kickers for the extra point. But he would always have a holder. And I'm always sitting there thinking, man, what a waste of a man being able to rush downfield and having an extra guy to take up a lane. And he would just like have his kicker and his holder be almost like safeties. They're sort of behind the wall of nine guys going down to make the play.
Yeah. So, well, it's probably like, especially at the high school level, it's, if you want to have two safeties back, that's probably not a bad way to do it. And especially if, sometimes kickers aren't the finest athletes, right? Hmm. And so, maybe you want to have a kid who can actually do something. I can see a high school coach doing that, but.
Yeah, but it's the worst thing in the world if you have a windy day and a kicker tees it up and it blows off the tee. Usually we'd give them two times off the tee. You got to get a holder. Oh my gosh, it's like you stole something from them. And the coach, oh my God, I got to use a holder? What are you talking about? Like, well, the guy down the streets has a holder every play. So it's funny how coaches get into their systems and in their head, what works and what doesn't. So,
whatever they do is the right way.
Yeah, that's for sure. But very interesting on the kicking tee, and especially, where the golf term came from, too. That's a, very, very interesting portion of what you talked about here, too. And just some crazy things that people have done to get that ball off, set up for somebody to get it off their toe or the inseam of their foot. So very, very good stuff. And you do this a lot with your tidbits and you share, an aspect of football that maybe isn't mainstream, maybe isn't talked about a lot, but you dig into the research and we appreciate that. Then maybe you could tell folks where they can see some of your research on these tidbits.
Yeah. If you want to dork out on football history, just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site. Subscribe and you'll get an email every time that I publish something new. Otherwise, just bookmark it, or you can follow me on Substack on the app, or follow me on Blue Sky, because I post every new article on there as well.
All right, well, Tim, we really appreciate you joining us here tonight and each and every Tuesday, and we'd love to talk to you again next week.
Very good, look forward to it.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
You did not see their faces on the Wheaties boxes, nor did they have the headlines, but they were breaking barriers, one pitch at a time. The integration of minor league baseball, a history and player register, 1946 to 1959, by Rick Swain and Gary C. Fink, shines a light on the overlooked heroes who paved the way for future legends. From dusty bus rides to hostile crowds, these players fought for a place in a game that did not want to see them win. More than history, it's a tribute to courage, perseverance, and the power of a game to change. Honor their legacy today and grab a copy of The Integration of Minor League Baseball at your favorite bookseller.